Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega, and this is episode 6. Man, that is crazy to think about. We are 6 episodes in what was once just a thought in my mind has come to fruition, and we've had a lot of laughs, good conversation with good people. It's been a crazy ride. Crazy in the fact that also, last week I said that I was dealing with an illness in Hurricane Helene and figured that that was over. We go back to business as usual. However, Mother Nature decided to send another hurricane my way, this time actually more directly towards the Tampa Bay area. And rather than ride it out like I did in Hurricane Helene, I decided to go back to Louisiana because all my family is here and I had the means to do so. So why be in a situation that I don't necessarily have to be in? And I can be safe and sound. And I know not everyone else may have had that luxury. Some people stayed in their homes or traveled more inland as best they could. And there's been a lot of damage around the Tampa Bay area. People lost their homes, or there's damage to their homes or businesses. And my thoughts and prayers go out to them. And if you're listening to this and have been affected by the storm, I hope I can provide a little escape from the hardships of the aftermath and, you know, bring a little joy to your life for the moment, because I know it's tough and it's going to be a long road to get back to some normalcy. And I know, again, a lot of people were affected by not only Hurricane Milton, but Hurricane Helene. I know in the North Carolina area, Adam Copeland, formerly known as Edge, was out there with FEMA finding, you know, dead bodies, whether they were in their homes or, you know, got washed out elsewhere. And that's a rough thing to hear, especially if, you know, it's a family member of yours. That's tough. So let's bring a little lightheartedness and jovial, nerdy bullshit to your life for the time being. So let's dive right into it, shall we? What have I been into this past week? I have been reading Radiant Black by Kyle Higgins. It came out a couple years ago. I tried to read it issue by issue, but, you know, life happens and you can't always get to the comic book shop. And I bought the trades, like there's 5 of them out right now, and I have all 5. Been reading those. And it's written, again, like I said, Kyle Higgins. He's written for Teen Titans. He wrote the first 50-ish issues, maybe, of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers from Boom Studios. He's the guy who was behind the Shattered Grid event. And he also directed a short for Shattered Grid with Jason David Frank as Lord Draken. That was really cool. And he's I enjoy his work. I especially enjoy this series. To describe Radiant Black as best I could in an elevator pitch form would be Power Rangers if they were millennials. But not necessarily Power Rangers, though. It's drastically different from Power Rangers itself, but you can feel and see the tokusatsu influence. And if you don't know what tokusatsu is, because you're not a big-ass nerd like I am and know a little bit about Japanese entertainment, that it's guys in super mech suits, you know, and their fight robots or giant monsters. And that's a big staple of the genre, all those things. So that's what they call it down there, tokusatsu, you know. Power Rangers was obviously a reinterpretation of Super Sentai for Americans. And, like, there's Kamen Rider and there's Ultraman. It's pretty popular down there. I think it's mostly kid shows, possibly. I'm sure there's some young adult series out there. I'm not a super big expert on it, but that's my cursory knowledge of it. But nonetheless, Radiant Black is part of a bigger universe called the Massiverse. And there's a couple other series in there with the Dead Lucky and Rogue Sun and a couple other, I think, pretty much everybody who's written a book in this universe has also written for Power Rangers from Boom Studios, which is kind of a neat little thing. I guess it all ties together because, again, the Power Ranger influence is very strong in this book, and I enjoyed it. You know, it tackles some issues that millennials deal with, like having to work two jobs and maybe not quite being where you like to be, even though you're in your 30s. And, you know, it's a hard time. Life beats you down. Capitalism sucks. And on top of all that, you have to deal with a cosmic threat coming to kill the world. I'm on book three right now, like I said. I like to buy independent comics more than I do the big two from, like, Marvel and DC because, you know, it's hard to get into because, like, there's 80 different continuities and, like, maybe it's part of this one, maybe it's not. This is canon, this is not. I don't know, just, you know, I don't read the trades for most big books, but I like to buy single issues of the creator-owned stuff, and I've tried to keep up as best I can with Radiant Black. I'm trying to catch up right now. I know they're in the middle of a event comic called The Catalyst War, and it's interesting about that is because it follows two main characters, and that it's like the similar, the same story, but like with different perspectives, I guess is a matter of putting it. And possibly at the end of it, we find out which one becomes Radiant Black. And there was a fan vote a while back I took part in. I know that much. And I can't wait to see where that goes. It's a neat little concept. I mean, there's also going to be an audiobook detailing the first volume, the first, like, six issues of Radiant Black. And it's going to be starring Will Friedle and Ryder Strong of Boy Meets World fame. And they're going to be playing Nathan and Marshall, respectively, or vice versa. Will Friedle is going to play Marshall, and Ryder Strong is going to play Nathan Burnett. And that's going to be interesting. I can't wait to hear that. I want to see... I mean, Will Friedle played Marshall in the little animated short that was produced and on YouTube. That was pretty fun. So I can't wait to see how he plays off of Ryder Strong. I haven't really seen Ryder Strong in anything else besides Boy Meets World. I mean, I don't think he's done much. I know he was in some horror film with Eli Roth. Can't remember the name, but doesn't matter. But no, this book's really interesting. Like, there's some superhero elements to it, but yeah, mostly millennial existential crisis, and I am all for it because maybe it's a little bit of a mirror into my life and what I'm looking at, and I can laugh and be entertained and possibly a little bit cry. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to cry. But no, it's a good read. Like, I love Kyle Higgins' work. His run on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was my favorite. It kind of fell off after him. Started everyone else. It's just my opinion. It is what it is. But that's been a lot of fun to read. What else have I been into? I'm still trying to finish Heat 2. I read it for a little bit and then fell off. And I'll give a little bit more in-depth analysis once I'm done with that. I've also watched Agatha All Along, and finally, some stuff has happened, and that seems like it's going to have consequence in the overall arc. Aubrey Plaza's character, whose name escapes me at the moment, Rio Vidal, we'll go with that, that sounds right. You know, she was in the first episode trying to attack Agatha, and then Agatha's like, hey, wait, let me get my power first, and then you can try to kill me. And you don't really get much backstory on Videl until this episode, this latest episode. I think it's episode 4 or 5. Forgot which one. It's been a blur. But nonetheless, you know, we find out that Aubrey Plaza's character has a past with Agatha. They were lovers and they were in a coven together. And yeah, so I guess there's some sort of bitter falling out, naturally, because everyone else distrusts her, because they make it known that, yeah, she's killed a lot of people over the years and she's not really to be trusted. So it's picked up a little bit, I'll give it that. Like, first 3 episodes were meh, not very good. And I don't know if this episode's gonna, you know, pick up the series and make it any better than what it is or what it could be. But we'll find out. That's just my, you know, light review of that latest episode, because I don't know, man. I'm not necessarily into it. Like, I'm gonna watch it to see it through the end just to see what the heck happens and if it ties into anything else in Marvel coming out, and just, you know, it's Marvel. I'm gonna stick to it and just see where it goes. Maybe I'll be disappointed. Maybe not. I don't know. I have low expectations of the show, honestly. After the first 3 episodes and just how it just didn't feel like it went anywhere, it is what it is at this point. I've been watching also the Penguin series, like I talked about last week, and boy, is it getting good. Sophia Falcone realizes there's a mole within the Falcone crime family. Somebody is helping the Maronis. And, you know, Sal Maroni gets his ring back from the Penguin. Penguin's trying to play both sides and tries to help the Maronis get the drugs from the Falcones. And that goes awry, as obviously as it would. And he's trying to keep his identity a secret. We also get a little bit of Vic's backstory and how he came to be where he is. That was neat and tragic. I'm not going to get too much into the spoilers there on that one, because you got to watch it. It's a great show. I truly feel this will be one of the best crime dramas in the past couple of years. Mark my words. Quote me on that. You could say I'm wrong because it's a comic book show, but no, I think this is going to be a really good drama or crime show that was going to be talked about for years to come, because it's just so good, man. It's just so good. Christian Milioti, who plays Sophia Falcone, is just so good. And she plays off of Colin Farrell so well. I like seeing them together. And, you know, they alluded to the fact that they were pretty close in the past and that Penguin is the reason she was in Arkham. He didn't mean to put her there, but that's him going to her dad that ended up having her put in Arkham. And everyone refers to her as the Hangman, which alludes to the fact that she's killed some people, though she swears she isn't the Hangman and had really nothing to do with that. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. I can't wait. The next episode comes out Sunday. I can't wait for that. Vic's character, you know, like I said, he got a little bit more depth, a little tragic backstory. And then you start to see that him and Penguin are a lot alike, and that Penguin identifies with him and feels like, yeah, he's him, so to speak. And, you know, the kid wants to escape and leave Gotham with his girlfriend, but he feels like he can't leave because Oz may kill him, or, you know, what other craziness happens, because it's Gotham, right? You know, and he's in the mob, he's working for the mob. But man, yeah, no, it's so good. The writing is so good. Again, a stark contrast to Agatha All Along, where nothing's happening and I don't feel like I need to root for Agatha. And again, Penguin is not somebody you want to root for, but you can understand his thought process on why he's doing what he's doing and how he feels like he wants to be somebody, how he's been a loser his whole life, and this is his means to having success. So you can identify with those things, and you can somewhat relate to that, even though, you know, you're probably not in the mob or want to be in the mob or a life of crime. But again, it makes him a somewhat identifiable or sympathetic character. And his mom is suffering from dementia, But he's kind of in denial. He doesn't want her to be in a home, but, you know, it's looking that way. Again, I'm not gonna spoil too much, but this is just a little bit tidbits here and there. But the writing has just been so good, man. I have loved every minute of it. I'm on the edge of my seat because, you know, Oswald is trying to play both sides and trying to keep his identity a secret from the Falcones, you know, trying to keep it a secret and trying to get what he wants out of Maroni, and then trying to build his rep and take his piece of the pie and become something more in the Gotham underworld. He's been able to talk his way out of some situations and others not so much, or they realize that, yeah, you're full of shit. However, this feels like a means to an end for us, so we'll play along. But just know that we know that you're a liar, and you may screw us, but we're gonna get you. Like the last episode, it was more Vic-centric, like I was saying. It dealt with his backstory and what he's wanting out of all of this, and whether or not he wants to continue in that life. Renzi Feliz is doing a phenomenal job as Vic. You could see the struggle within him about whether he wants to leave with his girlfriend or stay in Gotham and work with Oz, because, you know, Oz saw something in him and Oz has taken a liking to him. Like, he treats him very, very well.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You know, he's got a stuttering issue, and people try to talk for him, and, you know, Oz steps up for him and, like, tells him, hey, treat this man with respect. So it's been fun, again, to see their dynamic play out. And yeah, like I said, just I can't wait for Sunday. Sunday cannot get here soon enough, because I am fully in. But again, I want to see how this plays into the Batman 2, and whether or not Penguin might take more center stage in the next one. I know there's been a lot of rumors, like one's been Clayface, another's been Killer Croc, and both of those characters are pretty fantastical for the grounded, gritty world that Matt Reeves has constructed. But, you know, whatever the Penguin's up to, and that, can't wait to see it. Like, this has been a treat. It's been fun being back into that world that was created in Matt Reeves's The Batman. It's so funny to say The Batman. Not simply Batman, it's the Batman. One other thing I'm going to add to this before I move on is I think it'd be really cool if towards the end of the Penguin we set up for the arrival of Black Mask. That'd be really cool, or even if he shows up in the show, but, like, I feel that'd be super neat because, I mean, obviously there's a power vacuum, the Maronis are fighting the Falcones, and Penguin's trying to turn them all against each other so he could take the top spot. What better way to throw another monkey wrench in his plans than for Black Mask to show up? I mean, I feel like you could ground that character enough. I know, again, Matt Reeves is going for a more grounded, gritty take on Batman, but I feel like Black Mask could totally fit into that world a bit. Maybe. I don't know. That's just my opinion. But moving on from that, from one Batman villain to another, let's talk Joker Folie à Deux, or just the idea of it, rather, because I haven't seen it. I don't know if I'm gonna see it, to be honest with you. Like, maybe if friends call me and be like, hey, we're going to a movie tonight, and that's the one they pick, I'll see it, but I'm not gonna go seek it out. Maybe I'll wait for streaming for it. And the reason for that is because I have not been a fan of what Tom Phillips has said in the last press run, you know, so before the movie came out, especially when he said that this Joker is not the clown prince of crime. He's not some criminal mastermind. He's just a broken, mentally ill individual. And again, I think I said this last week and probably a couple times, I'm all for different interpretations of a popular character. I'm all for putting a unique spin on their backstory, or maybe trying some characteristic and putting that to the forefront that hasn't been explored before. I'm all for that. That's cool. Like the Penguin and the Batman franchise as a whole, with Matt Reeves as the director and writer, or shepherding that. I'm all for that spin on the character and how you make that dark and gritty and makes it, Batman felt like Seven instead of just a comic book movie. And I don't know what they're trying to do with this Joker series. I mean, I've read somewhere that he didn't necessarily want to do a sequel movie, and that Warner Brothers kind of forced his hand. And there's another story that Joaquin Phoenix and him really loved the Arthur Fleck character and wanted to see more of him and what would happen to him in the world after all the things he did in the first film. But, like, if you're not gonna have any of the core values of the character, then why are we here? What is the point? Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed The Joker when I saw it in theaters. I thought it was well made, and I liked how they kind of tackled mental health and how the government doesn't really put funding towards those benefits. I thought it was interesting to see, like, the play on whether or not his mom was telling the truth about Thomas Wayne and whether he's his father or not. Those were interesting elements. I mean, I kind of called Zazie Beetz being a figment of his imagination and that she really wasn't there. But overall, I enjoyed it. However, like, you know, subsequent viewings and hearing other people's perspectives on it and how it's pretty much King of Comedy and Taxi Driver, but with a comic book character, kind of, you know, maybe skewed my view of it or maybe think less of it. But watching it again and just hearing Todd Phillips's interpretation of this character and how it's not the Joker and how it's completely separated from Batman and that world, it's kind of like, what are we doing here? Because I even heard, like, in the middle of the movie, they call it the State of New York versus Arthur Fleck, which, like, it's supposed to be Gotham, right? Like, it happened in Gotham. In the first movie, you called it Gotham, and that they live in Gotham City, and that Gotham City is a shithole, but now it's New York? Or did you forget? Or was this lifted from another script? What were you trying to say with this movie? Or this entire franchise? Because, again, I've heard they did a complete 180 from everything they did in the first movie, so it kind of just, like, what are we doing here? It feels like how The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker are complete opposites of each other and undid what the other did. Like, it's just, it's preposterous. It's silly. And I get that the first movie made $1 billion, but it didn't make $1 billion because it's some downtrodden, mentally ill man named Arthur Fleck. Everyone saw it because it was the Joker and they thought they were going to get a unique take on the character, and they did, for the most part. They got a unique spin on the character, but again, like, if it's missing those core values or core elements of the character, and we're not going to get some sort of version of that, then I don't see a point in the movie, or the reason that you made that movie and making another one and completely going the opposite way. Like, Harley Quinn isn't even Harley Quinn in the movie. Her name is Lee Quinzel. So it's like we're already further divorcing ourselves from that character and that world. And I get comic book movies get a bad rap. All right? Like, they have their tropes, and they kind of stick to it. And they may not necessarily feel like a movie to some people. I mean, like I said before, like, The Batman felt like I was watching Seven, in a manner of speaking, with its cinematography, its tone, and the low lights, and all that. And, yeah, I don't know. Todd Phillips, yeah, he just wanted to make a Scorsese movie with his spin on it, with a known IP. That's what I feel like. This is just, he knew he couldn't get that movie made without it being attached to an identifiable IP. And so that's why it's there. So that for all of that, and because it's a jukebox musical, and it made me not want to go see it because I'm not getting a Joker movie then, and I'm not getting anything that remotely identifiable with him. Like Batman's not in it, and that's fine in a manner of speaking. Like I mean, it'd be neat if they would allude towards him more, being around in the world, like not being in the forefront, and we're just following, the Joker, but we don't even get that. So, who is this for? Who is the series for? Why are we doing it? It's unnecessary. And I'm not looking forward to seeing it. Like I said, I don't plan on going to see it in theaters. When it hits streaming, I may watch it just for the sake of seeing it and say and like seeing how it holds up to the other movie and see if it really goes the way everyone else has been saying, and if I'm gonna feel the same way as they did about it. Because don't know, man. Like, I don't get why people are so embarrassed of the origins of a story or its source material. Like, there's nothing wrong with comic books. There have been some really unique stories told in the comic book medium, and that's all it is. It's a different medium, and you can adjust that to a more grounded take or a different approach than what comic book movies have done for the last 2 decades or so, whatever. Because I mean, it's very different than what they did in the 90s, that's for sure. But it still feels like there's a negative connotation to when people say it's a comic book movie. And I really hope that changes. I mean, we've seen glimpses of it with how Logan felt more like a Western, the Batman felt like Seven. Or some sort of gritty detective story, or a noir, if you will. Yeah, I mean, again, the Joker was different, but it still wasn't that character. And that's the thing. Like, if it still has the spirit of the character and what they are known for, that's fine. I am cool with that. Like I said, we need to have different takes. We can't just keep seeing the same thing and telling the same story the same way over and over and over again. And I don't feel like Todd Phillips wanted to make this movie, so or wanted to do his little art house film with his friend, and it to hell with everyone else. And I mean, it's made back. It didn't even make half of what the first movie made. So I guess that kind of tells you what people think of this movie. But again, like I said, I'll see it for myself eventually and maybe give you my opinion on it because it doesn't feel like the character. And I'm not invested in the story, but in keeping with that theme of reinterpretation, DC Comics is starting a new line called Absolute. And they've released Batman Absolute, and this take on the character and the Joker himself is fascinating to me. From what we know, Batman or Bruce Wayne is not a millionaire. He's not the guy we know and love. He's still, trained to become Batman, but he's a younger Batman and he doesn't have all the resources he has in the mainline DC. Alfred Pennyworth is not his butler. He's a mercenary working for some cabal. The Joker, however, is a millionaire, possibly an industrialist, and he's been training all over the world, and he never laughs, he never cracks a joke, and that's where he gets his name, The Joker, from. To me, now that sounds interesting. I will definitely read that when it hits trades, because I'm not going to go buy single issues, because it's already a hassle enough with everything else that I buy at the comic book shop. When it hits the trade paperbacks, I will definitely read it. But to me, that sounds interesting. It's unique take because Batman is almost in every iteration is rich. Now I know when Darren Aronofsky was thinking about doing a Batman movie and was gonna do an interpretation of Batman Year One, he was a mechanic and he wasn't necessarily rich in that version. So this is neat. I'm looking forward to that, and it's kind of wild to think about that. Basically, in the absolute universe, that the Joker is everything that Bruce Wayne was and is, and he's doing just that, and he's trained almost like from the same masters as him, And that Joker that knows martial arts sounds all even more terrifying than he already is, because, like, he can scrap. And that's going to cause some issues for the Batman, because, I mean, almost every iteration, Batman just, you know, beats him pillar to post, like, beats him into the mud, and he just takes it. And, you know, I mean, he uses pipes here and there, but, like, he wasn't a formidable fighter, so that would be super cool to see in live action or an animated feature. I'm sure that'll hit, you know, streaming service at some point, but I get this is kind of DC's answer to Marvel's Ultimate line, and because that they've rebooted that again, because again, getting into comic books is hard because canon changes every like fucking 3 years and it gets annoying, and then the story's canon, oh, but this is not, but you gotta know this story from this tie-in that no one remembers, but you know, it can be convoluted. So if this is gonna spark interest in comics, then I'm all for it. If it's gonna create more interesting stories that I might be inclined to read, because I've never been a fan of Wonder Woman, never read a Wonder Woman comic, but in this universe, she's gonna be, instead of from Themyscira or an Amazonian, she's gonna be from hell. So that would be an interesting take, to see how a Wonder Woman from hell operates. You know, and Superman in this universe doesn't have, apparently, the Kent family as his parents, and the whole world is bleak, and yet he's still hopeful, despite not having all those things that made him in those other universes, like with the family aspect, and he's alone, so again, I'm not really a Superman fan either. Like, the only Superman story that I really enjoyed was All-Star Superman with Grant Morrison. I think that's more to do with Grant Morrison himself, because I'll read just about anything he writes. I know sometimes he can get off the deep end in some craziness, but for the most part, I enjoy anything, or just about anything that man writes. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's something that might be in the future for me to check out. Now, I know I said in the past that this podcast will not be about wrestling. I'm around wrestling almost all the time. I talk wrestling almost all the time with other wrestlers. I watch wrestling, for the most part, a lot. And I'm wrestled out and want to do something different. However, Netflix has a series called The Queen of Villains, and it's about Dump Matsumoto. She was a female wrestler in Japan in the 80s, and part of the stable called the Atrocious Alliance, which included Crane Yu, Condor Saito, and Bull Nakano. So I'm interested to seeing how that is. I know Netflix has had Glow in the past, which is a really great series. They've renewed Heels. I mean, Heels was on Stars that got canceled, and Netflix has picked it up. I mean, obviously they're getting a lot of wrestling on their streaming service, because in January, WWE is going to be having Raw on there. It's going to be live. That's going to be interesting, because I don't think Netflix has done anything else live. So that's going to be cool to see. And I'm curious. I mean, from what I saw from the trailer for The Queen of Villains, it looks really, really good. And I'm deciding whether I'm going to watch it dubbed or subbed. That sounds so anime of me, because most people are like, oh, do you watch the dub or the sub? But I think I might watch it in its native tongue, because it's just better that way. Dubbing in English, especially for live action, is rough. I mean, if you've watched any old Kung Fu movie, you know. So that will be the exception to the wrestling rule. I will watch that show, and it's 5 episodes from what I saw, so it'll be a quick watch. So I will give you my thoughts on episode 1 next week. That's something to look forward to. I know, like, this past 2 weeks have been pretty loosey-goosey with, you know, I haven't had a set plan on what I was really necessarily going to talk about, like, ahead of time. I've done research in the week of some things that I'd want to talk about, obviously, but, like, a little more fast and loose, given the fact that back-to-back hurricanes. And I promise to be a lot more disciplined on that, and having something more prepped or maybe advertised for the weeks to come, because yeah, man. But I hope you enjoy so far. Again, it's kind of weird being by myself because I got so used to Caden and Aaron being a part of the conversation, being able to, you know, lay out for a little while, hear them talk, and then jump in with something from me. It's hard doing a podcast by yourself, man. Really is. You know, I listen to Solid Monster Sounds Off, and Jason Solomon makes this shit look easy and without a co-host. So kudos to him. That's a great podcast. If you want to get your wrestling fix, go listen to the Solid Monster Sounds Off. He's pretty good. I like his stuff. That, I think, about does it for this week. Thank you all for tuning in. Again, my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who's been affected by Hurricane Helene and Milton. You can find me on all social media platforms at TheJCVega. If you'd like to support me directly and have some of my cool merchandise, then head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com. I got one shirt that says Punk Rock, another that says Rainbow Dash, and another that is this show name. So a lot of cool stuff on there. Help support your boy. I gotta eat and I gotta keep a roof over my head. So, you know, contribute. Do it. You look cool. Plus, you look cool. And it's not like every other wrestling shirt. You know when you see them. This is not that. So get one on your back and put some money in my pocket. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.